If a tree is situated in somebody's field, but Shershe Ilon shall head yet, the roots of this tree, where the tree itself is situated in a regular individual's field, but the roots, Boim shall Hekdesh, extend into a field which has been designated to the Beis HaMikdash underground, v'shal hekdesh boim shal hedyot, or if the tree itself is situated in a field which has been designated to the Beis HaMikdash, but its roots extend underground and enter into a field which belongs to a particular individual who still owns his field himself. The Mishnah says, l'ne'enin, it's forbidden to benefit from the roots of those trees. V'lo'imayalin, however, me'ila will not apply. The punishments of bringing a korban and paying an extra fifth, that will not apply. And the Gemara explains that the only part of the roots of a tree which are halachically considered to be an extension of that tree are the roots which are within 16 amas of the bottom of the tree. Those are the roots which give the tree the vast majority of its nourishment from the ground. So any roots which are within 16 amas of the trunk of the tree would be halachically considered an extension of the tree, whereas any roots which are further away than 16 amas, they've traveled that far underground, those are halachically not considered to be part of the tree at all. Accordingly, in the first case, where the tree itself is situated in a normal field, in a regular field, whereas the roots spread into a hekdesh field, the roots which are further than 16 amas away from the original tree are considered to be totally hekdesh. They are situated in a hekdesh field, and they're considered part of that field. They're not considered an extension of the original tree. So therefore, when the Mishnah says that Me'ila does not apply, we're specifically talking about the roots which are within 16 amas of the original tree. And just like the actual tree does obviously not have Me'ila applying to it because it's in a regular field, so to the roots would be an extension of that, and therefore Me'ila would not apply. That having been said, it's forbidden Midrabanon to benefit even from those roots, because at the end of the day, they are situated underneath the hekdesh field, so that they do appear to be a part of that field. In the second case, where the tree is situated in a hekdesh field, and the roots extend into a normal field, it's actually the opposite. The roots which are within 16 amas, Me'ila would apply to them, because they're considered an extension of the hekdesh tree, and therefore the roots themselves are considered to be designated to the Beis HaMikdash, and Me'ila would apply. When the Mishnah says that Me'ila does not apply, in the second case of the Mishnah, we're specifically talking about the roots which are further away than 16 amas from that hekdesh tree. Second case of the Mishnah, Hamayon, a spring of water, Shuyetz Mitochs de Hekdesh, which is coming out of a field which has been designated to the Beis HaMikdash. We're either talking about where the spring itself emanates from there, or it emanates from a different field, but it goes through this hekdesh field. Either way, the scenario being discussed is where the spring of water itself was not designated to the Beis HaMikdash. It happens to just go through that field. Midrabanon le'nenin, it's forbidden to benefit from the water of that spring, because since it's going through the hekdesh field, it does appear to be part of that field, and it does look like you're benefiting from something which has been designated to the Beis HaMikdash. However, v'lo'mayalin, Mila would not apply to that water, because at the end of the day, it was not designated to the Beis HaMikdash. Now, Yotzechutz Asodeh, the water which has come out of that hekdesh field and is now continuing down the stream in a different person's field, Nenim Menu, of course it is permitted to benefit from that water, because the only reason why it was forbidden in that field itself was because it looks like you're benefiting from the field. It looks like it's part of the field, but once it has left, since anyway, according to the strict letter of the law, it shouldn't really be forbidden to benefit from it, so outside, the water which has now left the part of the stream which is in the hekdesh field, it would be permitted to benefit from that water. Third case, on Sukkos, one of the things which was done in the Beis HaMikdash is that every day they would pour water onto the Mizbeach, and this was a big cause of celebration. All of the dancing and joy on Sukkos surrounded this process called Nisuch HaMayim, where they would pour water which they had gathered from a special spring. They would pour that water onto the Mizbeach. Be it as it may, the water had to come from a spring which was quite a distance away from Yerushalayim, and on Shabbos it's forbidden to carry that water from the spring to the Beis HaMikdash. You're not allowed to carry something from public domain into a private domain of the Beis HaMikdash. So in order to be able to perform this procedure of Nisuch HaMayim even on Shabbos, they would collect the water the day before, on Erev Shabbos, Friday, and they would use that water the next day. The issue is that we've seen already in this Masechta earlier on an invalidation of Lina. Lina refers to the invalidation that once something has been placed into a utensil used as part of the service of the Beis HaMikdash, if it is left there overnight and that which needs to be done with it hasn't yet been done, the service which needs to be performed with that item hasn't been performed, if it's left overnight, it becomes totally invalid. Which means that if that water would be placed in a utensil of the Beis HaMikdash on Friday, it would become invalid by the time they got to Shabbos, and they wouldn't be able to perform that procedure of Nisra Mayim. And therefore, they would place the water in a golden jug, which had not yet been designated for the use of the service of the Beis HaMikdash, and therefore, it wouldn't put this invalidation of Lina into place. Hamayim Shebechad Shel Zohav, the water which is in this golden jug, Loinenin, it's forbidden to benefit from that water Midrabanan, since the water has been designated for the purpose of Nisra Mayim. However, since at the end of the day, it hasn't yet been placed in that, in a utensil of the Beis HaMikdash, which gives it the sanctity, which would cause the invalidation. So, Velo Mayalin, Me'ilah does not apply for that reason. However, Ninu Batzloiches, once they transfer the water into a jug which was designated for the service of the Beis HaMikdash, they transfer the water into this jug on Shabbos itself. Now, it does have all of the sanctity that a regular korban or anything used as part of the service of the Beis HaMikdash has, and therefore, Moyalin Bohen, Me'ilah would apply to somebody who benefits from that water from that moment onwards. The fourth and final case of the Mishnah discusses another procedure which was done on Sukkos in the Beis HaMikdash, and that was they would stand very large arovos, the willow branches which are used as one of the four things that we shake on Sukkos. They would have very large arovos which they would place on the side of the Mizbeach, and the Kohanim would surround the Mizbeach whilst holding onto their lulavim. Now, the arovos, these big arovos which they would stand on the side of the Mizbeach, they weren't strictly speaking a korban, and nor was this a service, really, in the Beis HaMikdash, enough for the arovos to actually gain a real level of sanctity, which would make one liable to Me'ilah. It's not a service of the Beis HaMikdash, strictly speaking. And therefore, Lenenin, it is forbidden Midrabanan to benefit from these arovos, these large branches, because they've been designated for the purpose of a mitzvah. But Vloin Me'alin, Me'ilah would not apply because it's not something which is considered a service of the Beis HaMikdash per se. Rabbi Elozman at Rabbi Tzodik, Omer Rabbi Elozman at Tzodik adds that the custom was that Noisen Hoim Menos Kenimul Vehen, the elders, the honorable people, would place those arovos in their lulavim, and they would shake those arovos as part of their lulavim, even though they had been designated at least for this mitzvah, and we just learned in the Mishnah that it was therefore forbidden Midrabanan to benefit from these. Because there is a important rule that mitzvahs lav lehonos nitnu. The performance of a mitzvah is not considered, halachically speaking, to be like a physical benefit, and therefore, though it's forbidden to physically benefit for one's own use from these things which were designated for that mitzvah, it is permitted to use them for the sake of a mitzvah, such as shaking the araminim, the four species which are shaken on Sukkos. Mishnah Ches, ken shebereishis ha'ilon shel hekdesh, if there is a nest, a bird nest, in the top of a tree which has been designated to the Beis HaMikdash, Lenenin, it's forbidden to even benefit from that nest, even though the nest is not part of the tree, in case somebody comes to benefit from the other branches and twigs which are part of that tree. Velo Mayalin, however, if somebody does benefit from it, he will not be liable to the punishments of Me'ilah, because at the end of the day, the nest itself is not Hekdash. It does not belong to the Beis HaMikdash. Shebo Ashera, a bird nest which is found in an Asherah tree. An Asherah tree is a tree which has been served for the sake of idolatry. It's being worshipped, and it is therefore forbidden to benefit from that tree. So at first glance, this would be very similar to the previous case. We have the tree itself is forbidden to benefit from. So Midrabanan is forbidden to benefit from the nest which is in there as well. However, the Mishnah says that although it is true that one cannot benefit from the nest whilst it's still in the tree, especially since this would require you to climb the tree and thus you would be benefiting from the tree itself, it is, however, permitted that Yatiz Bakone, one can hit it with a reed, some sort of stick, in order that it fall to the ground, and then you'd be able to benefit from the nest. The reason why the Mishnah is less strict with regards to the tree of an Asherah, the tree which is worshipped as idolatry, is because anyway the nature of people, especially those who did not serve idolatry, is to separate themselves and naturally distance themselves from something which is worshipped for the sake of idolatry. And therefore, we don't need to be so concerned that if we allow you to benefit from the nest, you'll come to benefit from the branches and the twigs of the actual tree. There's less of a concern which exists, and therefore, as long as you take the nest out of the tree, not by hand, but with a stick, without using the tree itself in order to do so, then it would be permitted to benefit from the nest and any birds which are in the nest. Continues the Mishnah. Somebody who designates an entire forest as towards the Beis HaMikdash, Me'alim B'kulay, Me'ila would apply to the entire forest, whether it be the trunk of the tree, or the branches, or the leaves. He designated the entire forest to the Beis HaMikdash. On the other hand, Hagizborim Shelokhwes O'Eitzim, when the treasurers of the Beis HaMikdash come to buy wood for the sake of the Beis HaMikdash, the fire on the Mizbeach, or more accurately, for construction purposes in the Beis HaMikdash, they would intend to buy, and therefore to make into hektash, something which belongs to the Beis HaMikdash, only the parts of the forest which they could use as actual beams, and therefore Merlin Bo'etzim, Ilo would apply to somebody who benefits from the actual pieces of wood and the beams which come from the forest. But the Merlin Lo Bashipo Lo Banaviyam, Ilo would not apply to somebody who benefits from the small pieces of wood and the wood shavings which come off during the procedure of getting the wood, and likewise Me'ila would not apply to the Neviyah, which we're going to translate to mean the leaves, because the treasurer's never intended to buy that part or to make that part designated to the Beis HaMikdash and be the Beis HaMikdash's possession. Peridal Mishnah Aleph, the focus of this fourth parak of the Masechta is combining different acts of Me'ila together in order to make somebody liable. The minimum amount for which one would be liable to Me'ila, it has to be something which is worth at least a pruta. That's the smallest amount of money which is worth something and at all significant. And the Mishnah begins by telling us that Kodshi HaMizbeach, all different types of korbanos which are designated for being offered on the Mizbeach, can combine together to make somebody liable for Me'ila. If he benefits from, let's say, half a pruta of an animal which was for a korban oila, and later on he benefits from half a pruta of an animal which has been designated as a korban chatas, they would combine together to make him liable to bring a korban and to pay the value plus a fifth. Now, it should be noted that they would only combine if he didn't become aware in the middle. The punishments of Me'ila only apply if one does so unintentionally. And in order for these two unintentional acts to combine, it must be that he didn't find out in between the two acts about him having sinned in this way. Additionally, different types of korbanos can combine, or l'chayv aleihem mishum pigel, to make somebody liable for the prohibition of pigel. Pigel is a korban which became invalidated as a result of somebody who was performing one of the procedures of the korban, and he had the intention that part of the korban will be eaten or burnt on the Mizbeach beyond its time limit. That invalidates the korban, and if somebody eats the korban, he will be liable to the severe punishment of Kores, where he's, so to speak, cut off from Hashem and the Jewish people. If he does it by mistake, he would need to bring a korban chatos, be it as it may. If somebody eats, let's say, half a kezias is the size of an olive, that's the minimum size of pigel that one would need to eat in order to be liable to these punishments. So if somebody ate, let's say, half a kezias of pigel from a korban oila and half a kezias of pigel from a korban chatos, then that would combine to make him liable. Likewise, noisar. The same applies when he violates the prohibition of noisar, which is a korban which was valid but has now passed its time limit for eating it. And Vatome, an impure person who is also forbidden to eat korbanos, if he eats different types of korbanos, that would also combine to make the minimum size in order to make him liable to those punishments. As well as that, Kodshe Bedek Habayis Mitztarfim Zeimzeh, something which has been designated to the Beis HaMikdash for the sake of maintaining and upkeeping the Beis HaMikdash, which means that the item itself is not going to be used as part of the service or as a korban, but either it will be used itself for the maintenance or it will be sold. And the money will go towards the maintenance of the Beis HaMikdash, be it as it may. If somebody benefits from all different types of items which are within that category of Hekdash, it would combine to make him liable. Kodshe HaMizbeach v'kodshe Bedek HaBayis mitztarfim zeh lezeh Me'ila. Now the Mishnah adds that even korbanos which are designated for the Mizbeach and items which have been designated for the maintenance of the Beis HaMikdash, even those can combine together for making somebody liable to Me'ila. At the end of the day, for the sake of Me'ila, they both have the same prohibition. One is not able to benefit from the Hekdash. They're both designated to the Beis HaMikdash, and therefore they can combine to make that minimum amount of a Shoveh Pruta, that minimum value, for him to be liable to the punishments of Me'ila. Mishnah Beis. This Mishnah elaborates on the previous Mishnah, which taught that for Me'ila, different types of korbanos can combine, and also for the prohibitions of Pigel, Nosar, and Tomei. And the Mishnah explains, Chamisha Dvarim Ba'Oilam Mitztarfim Zeh Mzeh, there are five different things within a carbon oila, or within that which is brought when one brings a carbon oila, and that they can all combine together. Habosar, the meat of the animal, the achelev, and the fats of the animal which are burnt on the Mizbeach, the hasoiles, and the flour which is brought as a separate carbon to accompany that carbon oila, the hayayin, and the wine which is also poured on the Mizbeach to accompany that carbon oila, the hashemen, and the oil which is mixed with the flour. All of those things can also combine because they're all brought on the Mizbeach, they're all part of the service of the Beis HaMikdash. V'shisha b'toida, there are six things within a carbon toida which can combine, and in this case we're not talking about combining for the sake of me'ila, because a carbon toida is an example of kochim kalim. That's a type of carbon where the owner who is bringing the carbon can eat part of the meat. And as we've seen throughout the Masechta, me'ila would not apply to such an animal until a much later stage, and even then it would only apply to the part which is going to be burnt on the Mizbeach. So here the Mishnah is referring specifically to the prohibitions of pigel, noser, and tomei. Those would apply to all of the carbon, and habosar, the meat, v'achelev, the fats which are burnt on the Mizbeach, v'asoles, the flour which accompanies this carbon, v'hayayin, and the wine which accompanies the carbon, v'ashemen, and the oil which is mixed with the flour, v'halechem, and the 40 loaves of bread which accompany the carbon toida. When one brings a carbon toida, he's obligated to bring 40 loaves of bread as well. All of these would combine to make somebody liable to the prohibitions of pigel, noser, and tomei when an impure person eats any of these items. Hatruma. Truma is a portion of one's produce that a farmer has to separate and give to a kohen. Or trumas meiser. Trumas meiser is a gift that a Levi, who he himself receives a tenth of the farmer's produce, that's known as meiser rishon, from that tenth which he receives, he has to separate a tenth of that and give it to a kohen. And that is called trumas meiser, or trumas meiser shel demai. This refers to doubtful trumas meiser, which we're not sure whether it's trumas meiser, but midrabanan it's treated as regular trumas meiser. Hachala, a portion of one's dough that he is obligated to separate when he bakes and give it to a kohen. V'habikurim, and the first fruit which ripened in one's field, which there is also a mitzvah to bring to the Beis HaMikdash and ultimately give to a kohen. The Torah refers to all of these things as truma. And because of this common name which they all have, which they all share, mitztarfim zeh mzeh, they can combine together le'esor, to forbid a mixture. For example, it's important to realize that just like truma is given to a kohen, once it's been given to the kohen, it's forbidden for a regular person to eat it. Only a kohen is allowed to eat any of these items. Now, if regular produce, which is permitted for everybody to eat, gets mixed with some truma, the halacha is that if there is 100 times more permitted produce than truma, it would nullify the truma and it would all be permitted. So the Mishnah is telling us that these different types of truma would combine to forbid the mixture. For example, let's say there's 200 units of fully permitted produce, and there's half a unit of truma, half a unit of trumas meiser, half a unit of challah. So each one of those by themselves, there's enough permitted produce to nullify them. But since they combine together, the permitted produce would not nullify it, and the entire mixture would be forbidden because of the truma and the different types of truma which are contained within that mixture. In addition, the law is that if somebody who is not a kohen eats truma or any of these items, he's obligated to pay a kohen the value of that which he ate, in addition to an added-on fifth, in a similar way to one who benefits from hekdesh. Now, the minimum amount that he has to benefit, that he has to eat in order to be obligated to do so, is a kazayas, the size of an olive. So the Mishnah says that all of these would combine to make up that minimum size, to make him obligated to pay that extra fifth to a kohen.